chance to make it 28-3. Arthur Blank loving it, up by 25. Toss to White. He's in! What a comeback!
All right, welcome back to another episode of the 28-3 podcast. Free agency has started. We're 1 week in. The Saints have made a flurry of moves. I guess that depends on your definition of flurry.
I was about to say, you could call it a flurry. It's a flurry of something. It's more,
it was not a flurry.
What do the weather people call it? Like a wintry mix?
Yeah.
Honestly, until the Chase Young signing, it was. Man, is this really going to be our free agency? Where, you know, mixed feelings, because on one end, it's, hey, maybe we're finally showing the financial restraint that we thought we should show. But then my mind goes to, well, it's financial restraint that the rest of the media in the whole league wants us to show. As a Saints fan, I kind of love this idea of pissing off the powers that be, or the people who are like, you can't do that with the cap. And it's like, watch us. We do it every year. But there was some relief in kind of thinking, like, well, sure, we'll probably do some kicking of the can because we still have to, but maybe we're trying to put ourselves in at least an easier position to, go into the next offseason, sign people when we really have to.
I think it's going to take 2 years to really get to the point where they can go make a big splash.
They did kick the can down the road on multiple contracts.
And that's the thing. They did.
They're just slowly getting.
Yeah, because they did still do some restructuring that you could say is kicking of the can. But now, honestly, you know, we're going to – don't worry, anybody who's listening – the news about Chase Young did break today. We're going to get into that.
Why don't we start off with that?
Let's just address the elephant in the room. So, yeah, you know, I always get texts from friends when there's big Saints news, like happened today with Chase Young and his injury report. Are y'all doing an emergency pod? And look, this is not an emergency pod. We're already planning on recording today anyway.
This is just a well-scheduled pod.
So to address the emergency pod elephant in the room, God, man, talk about the most Saints thing ever.
Man, it really is. It's like we were so optimistic about the signing. I think all of us were on board with it. We all wanted Chase Young. I mean, we needed Chase Young. If you look at our defensive end depth chart, you know, before the signing, it was pretty barren.
And also considering the free agent edges that had already signed with other teams. You know, we were barren as a team. The free agent cupboard was getting pretty bare in terms of guys who are actually worth a shit or can make a difference that are still out there. And, you know, look, I get the faction of people who are like, Chase Young, not proven, could suck. And this was even before we heard the news today about his neck. And there's some validity. I mean, he's not a sure thing, but it's the ceiling. And so his ceiling versus the rest of what was out there, taking into account, you know, just the abyss of what's on our roster now. Yeah, it made sense.
I
think it still makes sense, but...
No, it makes sense, and you almost have to roll the dice on it because, you know, the reality was we were backed into a corner where we were going to have to trade up to go secure an edge rusher in the first round. And now I think, you know, we had a 24-hour period where we were like, you know what? Maybe now we don't have to do that. But now, after hearing about the next surgery that's coming up, I don't know, man. I'm kind of back to we might have to trade up and go get another edge. You know, whether it's Dallas Turner or Latu, it's scary thinking about Young and that neck injury.
Yeah. It takes the Young signing from nothing but
positivity,
like tempered excitement.
Yeah.
Okay. Because you know who he is, you know the player he is. As Nick and I have already said on our text.
Well, we don't know who the player is.
Well, we know Nick and I think he is not name brand Marcus Davenport. We do not think it's an apples to apples. But there was at least reason to say, hey,
Well, let's add a little color to that statement.
But at least we're getting a guy with an upside.
Yeah, let's add some color to that. So there was a text message thread that we have going, and I made the comment that, you know, there's an apples-to-apples comparison between Marcus Davenport and Chase Young, just that both were first-round picks. Chase Young was the second pick in the draft. Davenport with, you know, two first-round picks going into his selection. You know, the two of them physically are just basically King Kong and shoulder pads. And if they had the desire and drive of someone like, you know, one of the Bosa brothers, they're probably going to put up 15 to 16 sacks a year.
Yeah.
The reality is both of them have been injured for the majority of their career.
Davenport significantly taller than Chase Young?
6'6". Young's, I think, 6'4", and a half, 6'5".
Yeah. I always view Davenport as like a taller, a bigger guy.
Davenport's Young. A monster. You know, that small period of time where he was dialed in, you know, and I'll go ahead and say it was the year that DA went ahead and said he was the best player on the defense. I mean, he might have said he was the best player on the team that year. Davenport, when he's dialed in, is a fucking animal. The problem is, he's never really dialed in. He's more worried about anime and, you know, Pokemon and all that shit.
I thought that was Jamal Williams.
It's both of them. But Chase Young, you know, he's had some bad luck with injuries, the ACL injury, obviously, and that's, now with the neck injury, which apparently was something last year prior to the season.
Right.
My basis for comparison was just the fact that both of them physically have the ability to be perennial all-pros. They were both high picks. And that they both should be dominating, but they're not. Now, they both had issues with injuries. I'm not at all saying they're similar players in that they play to run the same or they play to pass. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying from a production standpoint and from an injury standpoint, they are very similar.
Okay, so here's my asshole question to that. You are familiar with what apples to apples means, right? As it lines up with similar.
That's why I said production standpoint and injury standpoint. I know you haven't been checking your text messages the last couple of days, and you've been missing in action on some of our discussions. But
yeah, you know, work calls. Gotta stay employed.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully,
but
the American way.
That was just a little cover to that. But the reality is,
it was an interesting discussion.
All three of us were very pleased with the Chase Young side.
Yeah, and to add even additional color, this was, I mean, I don't even know how long we went back and forth on text. Clearly, as much as I worked and didn't look at my phone today, I was on it with y'all yesterday.
Yeah, you go in spurts. You go MIA for 48 hours, and then you just get rapid-fire text for, like, the next 48 hours.
Yeah, but
why don't we let Nick chime in?
But this was I'll just say this was before the injury news. So like this whole debate takes on a completely different color now in my
mind.
Maybe
we still don't know the procedure, so we need to just temper that a little bit and wait. They're saying 4 month recovery. That would be crazy optimistic, I think, if it is if it's a fusion procedure. That seems like such an optimistic take on it. Could it happen? Sure.
Let me say this. Before anyone thinks Nick is just talking out of his ass, this is what he does for a living. He actually covers these kind of cases on a regular basis. So prepared to speak on something
like this. He has background in this area.
Yeah.
You know, multiple NFL players have had it and come back and been okay. We were talking
and earlier. have had what now?
Cervical fusion.
Okay, again, we don't know what it is, but if it is that.
Right. So I think we need to wait to hear that before we get too deep in the weeds on this.
We're like adamantly just leaning into
speculation. This is speculation.
There's not a whole lot of neck surgeries that are out there that you would think on an athlete at, you know, 24 years old that he would be having other than this, to me.
Because do you also factor in the fact that it's an injury that he apparently played with last year? I mean, because
he did, and you can play with it because it's generally a nerve issue, and it's how much, you know, either weakness or you know, how much it impacts his strength, basically. So you could play with it. Many players have, and it can get worse. It can stay the same. It's a toss-up across the board. I just don't – that's the procedure that it sounds like to me, just because that's – herniated disc is generally the thing you'll hear in football players when you're talking about neck surgery. So saying he's not ready doesn't say when he'll exactly be back. They're saying before the start of the season, I've seen multiple things. You know, to be back by, say, end of August, what's that give you? 5 months? Five and a half months, maybe, before the first game, roughly.
Right.
Maybe. But there's definitely a risk here that he's not ready for the beginning of the season if this is the surgery he's having. Because
this kind of screams as one of those situations where they're telling us now it'll go into training camp, but he should be ready by the beginning of the season. And then we're going to get to that point, and they're going to say,
everybody remembers Zion hurting his foot?
Yeah.
Okay. To be reevaluated in 2 weeks.
Yes.
Reevaluated
that
in 2 weeks.
That should have been an injury that, and this is just a freak thing that happened to Zion. It doesn't have anything to do with Zion. The foot surgery he had was a very minor situation and should have healed. It just didn't. It just lingered and lingered and wasn't fully healed. And I can tell you, unless this is fully healed, they're not sending an NFL defensive end out until this thing's fully fused. So that's just, you put a risk factor on that, right? 20%, 10%, whatever the doctors are telling them on a risk that, you know, hey, maybe this doesn't fuse in the normal time frame on a young, healthy person. And to think we I don't know what the guaranteed money was.
Yeah, we don't know. I know the max amount of it is 13. Yeah.
I thought the whole thing was guaranteed, just straight up.
We got to see.
Because a lot of the criticisms on Twitter were that, wait, all guaranteed, no incentives, what the hell, you know.
I don't think it's been confirmed yet, and obviously we know that Twitter, everyone likes to jump the gun. So let's see what the numbers are when they're officially confirmed.
If this is fusion surgery and we gave him $13 million guaranteed, you have to question what Loomis is doing. Just because there are risks associated with this where he, you know, there's probably a very small risk he misses the season. But to miss games and to give $13 million guaranteed when you know this going in is, you know, it has the vibes of the Nick Fairley signing, you know, where he doesn't play a down and next year he's a free agent and healthy and we rehab him for somebody else. But, you know, we just have to wait and see exactly what's going on. And
is there anything of a lower grade procedure that you think could be in the works for him?
I mean, if you remember, Peyton Manning tried to have a foraminotomy, which is a posterior surgery, very small incision, trying to address it, but you saw what happened there. He had a revision. It didn't work. He ends up missing the whole year. They end up doing the ACDF on Peyton at the end after doing the two surgeries prior.
What's those letters you just mentioned? Is that the fusion?
That's the letters stand for anterior cervical discectomy and fusion. So
there you go. Okay.
They take out the herniated disc and they fuse it with implants. And basically the bone just grows between the two vertebral bodies where the disc was.
And that's what I said in our text. Nothing about this seems conducive to somebody lining up at a position where he's bashing his head in against an offensive tackle every play.
If it heals perfectly, that's not really an issue.
Okay.
And I'm not a doctor, but I would say a doctor will say it's not a huge issue.
Yeah.
Very small loss of range of motion for a single level disc.
Talk to doctors and patient reps every day. So
if the bone is healed, this should not hinder his career as long as, you know, the nerve issue, you know, the decompression is done correctly and everything's good. Well, if it's a completely successful surgery, I don't think it impacts his career. I was reading there was a small, I don't want to call it a study, but it was published in one of the spine journals about players who had the procedure something like from 1970 to, I don't know, maybe 2016.
We're getting scholarly journals in this podcast. Look at this.
I was just curious kind of what the success rate, and it said 2/3 came back unhindered whatsoever. So, and he's very young too, which is beneficial.
It's good.
Not a lot of mileage.
Yeah, he'll be 25 in April.
Right. So, you know, optimistically, he has no issue. He comes back and he's the same player, or maybe even better, because if he does have weakness, that will be gone from this. It could fix it, and you could see the rookie version potentially. If this is something that's been hindering him for, they said all of last season. So they knew about it in the preseason. He wanted to play through it. He did. He had a pretty good year with it, 7.5 sacks. Yeah. It could mean there's a higher level here, potentially, if it goes perfect.
The whole playing with it not or getting the surgery now, it kind of reminds me of what Michael Thomas did not do. Or what the team told him to play, he played, and then they were like, oh, well, you shouldn't have played.
My question is, why
So at least he's not continuing to play.
This must be an agent thing,
Yeah.
Take out the wrist. Don't have it till you've signed something. That's all I can think, because why he wasn't in surgery the week after the Super Bowl makes no sense. There's no reason if this is what he was going to do, other than the fact that he was a free agent and he said, let's get a contract just in case.
It would have – your value is one thing when they think – when they say he's going to have surgery. It's a whole other ballgame when it's like he just had a surgery.
And look, kudos to his agent, because his agent pulled off $13 million. So, and it looks like from reading the Saints do have some protections for the injuries. So he won't reach the full $13 million if he misses any.
So
games,
if Loomis tied that in there, I have no problem with it. It's still worth the gamble. If there was no protection, it's 13 guaranteed, and you're taking this 10%, or you know, I said 2/3 came back 100% on this study. Now that takes into account surgeries 20 years ago, which were far past that level now.
Pre-Celestri.
That's right.
That being the doctor friend of the pod.
So, you know, presumably the results have gotten better every year for this type of thing, as technology's gotten better and the procedure's gotten more accepted. But still a risk. So if there's protections in there for the Saints, and
it looks like there are. So.
Okay. If there's a few million bucks guaranteed to him, and okay, it's worth the flyer to us. We'll give you a little bit, get through the surgery, get better. If you play, we're going to make it easy for you to get to 13. If you don't play, we don't have to pay much. So
yeah, my biggest concern is, you know, look, he's not going to be ready for training camp. He's probably going to come in a couple weeks in, and if he misses training camp, like, this guy needs training camp. It's not like you're bringing in prime Reggie White, who can just roll into any defense and go ahead and get 15 sacks while
But it is a position. But week one, you can say, go rush the passer on third down.
Well, yeah. Right. The technique is – he's already got the technique built in. He's only going to learn more, obviously. But I think of the conditioning. You know, it's like one thing to say go rush the passer, but –
I'm just leery of him missing training camp and then, you know, being very effective for the regular season. Because you've seen it. Like, a lot of times these guys we sign, they get injured in training camp, first year here, conditioning's off the rest of the season, they don't pick up the playbook, they don't have the mental reps down, and they just don't have a great year. Yeah. You know, the Honey Badger. Prime example, you know, we had this debate on the season review episode, I think, or season preview episode last year, where we talked about how he started off slow. And that's what I was telling you, how he finished strong.
Yeah.
But Honey Badger, he missed a lot of time in his first training camp with the Saints for personal reasons. And look, he was not great the first half of the season. He turned it on the last 4 or 5 weeks. So my concern with Chase Young on a one-year contract, I mean, this might be a one-year rental where he's in and out and just doesn't really have much of an impact. Obviously, this is very hypothetically, this is very premature. We don't know, you know, what the surgery is, but that's my biggest concern.
But also, to that point, if he doesn't have a big impact, he's not going to have a lot of suitors, and you bring him back low cost, probably for another one-year deal.
And we say that, but Davenport keeps getting contracts. He didn't do shit last year. Chase Young is always going to get a contract potential.
He got $6 million. That's different than $13 million. What I'm saying is, if he has a Davenport situation, he's probably looking at a $6 million 1 year to prove it next year.
Yeah.
I think. And he's in the building, and we're the most likely to bring him back in that case. If we shall see.
The thing, I'm actually, like, it sucks hearing the news, and I think it's just the timing of it, of getting excited we got him, then immediately, you know, we're 24 hours later, it's, oh, wait, hold on. So that part sucks. It's good to me that, if there is something that's this serious, that he is getting it done now, so that he's in a position to where it's as fixed as it can be heading into the year. He's not in a Mike Thomas situation where he's going to try it out and then he gets dinged again. And then, you know, it's just, you know, we all saw what happened there. But the negative to me is, or the concern is, you've got a guy who, you know, the knocks on him are that, you know, are the effort or the consistency of playing with the high motor on every single play. And so if you're a guy who's out of shape, you know, that only exacerbates the willpower in someone. You know, like, if you're out of shape, you're definitely more prone to take plays off if that's kind of the player you are. So, I don't want to call out players for that, because we don't know. Maybe he had a bad situation. Maybe he's going to have a fresh start. He's got a good locker room around him now. So maybe he's not going to be that kind of guy. Hopefully,
he's got a lot of former Ohio State teammates.
Yeah,
they're all happy he's here.
Hopefully, he's going to be in a much better place between the years with us than he was with the freaking Commanders. You know, in a terrible franchise at the time.
Well, the one thing I want to say back to, you know, our you know, text chain arguing over the comparisons to Davenport. Davenport is injury prone and soft until now. Yeah. Now there's another injury for Chase Young, so we'll see.
That's why I thought
it was one single injury for Chase Young, and it was a big one. It was an ACL. It had to miss part of the season and take forever to come back the next season because it just didn't get better on a good timeline. That's the only injury he's had. So it's hard for me to say he's injury prone when he had an ACL tear. That's it. It just impacted two seasons because it happened in the, you know, towards the back half of the season, and it rolled into the next year. Davenport misses games for stubbing his toe, man. And it's happened. It happened every year. We saw it. We're like, why is he not playing? It's a pinky toe or whatever. You know, even in his year that Max is talking about where he was, you know, seemed like he had finally figured out everything. Yeah. He missed five games that year. And then he comes back the next year and plays the whole season and has half a sack. The guy just, it was one thing after another. So, and from a talent, raw talent, the guy is talented.
Yeah.
From a football player, he really only showed that in one out of six seasons. So it's hard for me, and it was a different nagging injury every year. And then last year in Minnesota, you had them saying he should have been ready to play, and they don't understand why he's not playing, and he just wouldn't play. He just said, I just don't feel good. Mm-hmm. So,
well, they should have known that from his history in New Orleans.
Right. Well, that's why I'm saying the difference between the two players to me is I don't think you can call Chase injury prone when he had one injury of note.
Yeah.
It's a different thing. Now, the effort thing and all that, true. The two full seasons he played, he had 7.5 sacks. One of them, you know, his rookie year, he forced four fumbles and recovered three more. Last year, we find out he was playing through a nerve injury. It's, you know, this is the second injury. When we were having this talk, no one knew about this cervical injury.
Right.
But we also know he played through it when Davenport can't play through his pinky hurting. So,
well, in Davenport's defense, didn't he have it, the fucking thing amputated?
Did he? I don't know.
Yeah, he did.
That was the thing.
He didn't have.
But again, I'm not here.
It's five different injuries.
I'm not here to defend Davenport. Davenport, I fucking hate him. He single-handedly has wrecked the Saints' draft outlook from when he was drafted till now. Like, we just haven't done shit since.
I believe Chase Young is a better football player than Davenport. That's what my
he should be. He was the second pick in the draft.
That's true.
Yeah,
and the fact that he, and I would agree, hasn't lived up to second pick in the draft. When you're injured 2 years and you haven't had a double-digit sack season, you didn't live up to number two. True. I still think he's a better player than Davenport, and I don't think it's particularly close. If we're talking about athleticism and, you know, potential, maybe Davenport gets in that scale with Chase Young in a similar fashion. But he played in San Antonio, man. Yeah, like, Chase Young was dominant at Ohio State, was dominant his rookie season for the most part. I just think they're different players.
There's more to like they were young. I think, and I'll put a bow on the Young versus Davenport thing. I think this player comparison is one of those classic examples where if you want to look at the stats, you can make the stats bend your argument to Davenport because of their sack totals over their career, tackles for loss. Their stats look very similar. But this is a case where when you watch both of them play, like, what do your eyes tell you? To me, I think Chase Young looks like a hungrier player, a tougher player, to Nick's point, when he's out there.
I'll say that Chase Young looks like the better player from the eye test, but it ain't fucking like cut and dry where he's here and Davenport's here.
Yeah, unfortunately,
it's more similar than you guys think.
Yeah, no, unfortunately, both of these players have had bumpy roads since they entered
to
the
say
league,
the least.
To make it,
and both have had the tag of possibly being, you know, not putting the 100% effort through. And
that's not a good playoff guy. Yeah,
yeah.
I hear that. I'm still saying the 2 years that impacts his numbers greatly. Yeah. Was an ACL tear over 2 years. It just happened to be one of those late season or mid to late season that rolled into the next year.
Versus the slept on my neck wrong.
So to me, it's a little different. But whatever.
So besides, okay, so we went through Young.
Let's talk about Willie
pretty
Gay.
Good. I was going to say, the other signings we have, we got Willie Gay. I love that signing.
I think we all do on that one. That's
I watched some mashups.
It's an upgrade from Bond.
Mashups of his play. Definitely an upgrade from Bond, but I think he just fits a completely different role than Bond. I think they tried to force Bond into that Sam linebacker, maybe cover a mobile quarterback. And Bond, we've already talked about that ad nauseum. He's not equipped for that. When I watch Willie Gay, the dude's athletic as hell. His closing speed on quarterbacks behind the line is incredible. He had some athletic interceptions. He seems to have a good nose for the ball, just, you know, as a fan watching it. And he, you know, DA has said it, and I'm not saying this just, oh, DA said it, then it has to be true. But when you watch him play, and then you hear DA say, like, we look forward to his ability to be in there versus mobile quarterbacks. you hear that statement, you watch the way he played in KC, that actually shakes out. It makes sense.
I also like that Dennis Allen admitted that weakness.
Yeah.
Finally.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been years. And he finally admitted
it. Going back to the eye test, if you watch the highlights of Gay from last year versus the way we saw Pete play, I mean, Willie Gay looked a lot better last year than what Pete Warner looked like last year.
To me, this is direct competition for Warner. In a contract year.
I said it over text. It's partially it's competition for Warner, especially because they love to go with the two linebacker sets over a 4-3. But it does give us more of a capability to run a 4-3 by choice if we want to.
That's what I think.
With him in there, because you add another linebacker in there, it definitely should help with your run defense. Makes you more multiple, as Sean Payton used to like to say. When, you know, maybe before we left the nickel in, if it was passing likely down, even though they had a couple running backs in there or running back tight end, they kept the nickel in there because he's still better at guarding a tight end. You know, Gay's faster. He's more athletic. Maybe they can leave three linebackers just in case they pull a,
I think
you
he's
know,
faster than Warren?
QB draw.
Yeah. Much faster. He ran a 4.48 in his combine. Damn, he's fast as shit.
And it's, and again, it goes back, now that they're playing, it goes to game speed. You know, like, he just, his acceleration, his closing speed, yeah.
What I do like about it is that if let's say he performs and Warner performs, and let's just say DeMario does take the step back that is going to come at some point.
Yeah.
You know, that right there, you might have your two linebackers to run in the package that we've been running.
It definitely makes you feel better about the scenario where, you know, God forbid anything puts DeMario out for a game. I feel a hell of a lot better with him there if you had to run him and Pete together versus Pete and fill in the blank, you know?
Yeah, I do think it's competition, though, for Pete as well.
Sure. You know,
I think they're going to let him battle it out for weak side. And whoever performs better is going to get the nod at weak side linebacker. But to your point, both of y'all's point, it does allow you to get the three linebackers on the field and be,
yeah,
in theory, better against the run.
I think that's certainly – that's an address-the-run situation from, yeah, what happened last year.
And a mobile quarterback, yeah.
But look, they're both on one-year contracts at this point, so you're, yeah, not going to get both of them a big deal.
Right, and
so,
that's what I think they're doing. They're hedging a Werner
they're
big
hedging
contract.
It for sure.
They're hedging a DeMario injury.
Yeah.
They're bringing in a 26-year-old who they can re-sign if it all works out.
Yeah.
It's smart,
it's
all around.
It's a smart move.
This is what we wanted last year. We talked about this a lot in one of the, you know, before the season, in that, hey, at some point, DeMario is going to fall off.
Yeah.
Then he went out and showed us all where
became an all-pro, yeah.
And was all-pro again. But, it does end at some point. And last year, we went in with just those two that could play the position. It made no sense. And, you know, there was one game, you know, was it one game Warner was out?
Definitely one, but it wasn't a long stretch. I mean, he still finished the year with 90-something tackles.
90-something tackles, yeah.
I mean, I think, honestly, given our history, we got lucky.
Yeah, that's
what
I'm
saying. Both.
I think we got super lucky. Because
I mean, this is the first time in 4 years, yeah, we're going to have, you know, a third viable,
yeah,
linebacker.
We did not go into this year prepared at the linebacker, the starting
now,
linebacker
position. Now, look, Caden Ellis in the back half of 22 was fantastic.
Absolutely.
Zach Vaughn on the back half of 23 was actually, yeah, pretty damn good when they let him rush the passer.
Yeah, when they put guys in the position they played in college.
I just think it's something that had to be done when you got a 35-year-old star,
yeah,
and a young guy going into a contract year. Everyone should be competing every year. So, like, of course, I think they're competing. I think DA likes Warner more than a lot of people think. I think this means a lot more 4-3, like Corey said, to address the run issues from last year. Maybe because we're not as stout up the middle, pending what happens in the draft and all this. We're not as – his whole defense starts with stopping the run. We've, mm-hmm, always said that. That's why we never allowed 100-yard rushers. We focus on that, and we let the back end cover up the mistakes, right? That's been our whole move. We always draft max pitches about the big defensive ends that play the run. That's the strategy of the DA defense. First off, stop the run.
Yep.
We got gashed by it in multiple games last year. I think this is a direct move to address that and hedge Warner leaving and DeMario
running from running backs and last year quarterbacks too. So,
well, let's look at this. So how do you feel about the defense?
I was getting ready to say.
Yeah, a week into free agency, how do you feel relative to how we finished?
Since we, you know, those were the only two big signings, right?
And right. We lost Yadam.
We lost Yadam.
We lost Bond. And we lost Malcolm Roach, which is big.
That's big, especially from the run defense side. Like we were talking about, he was one of the better run defending tackles in the league.
Y'all know I harped on it. Yeah.
In the middle of the season, y'all I said, too, but, Roach looks like our best defensive tackle. I think I said that.
Yeah, to your credit,
six.
You texted me about the halfway point of the season. We're like, Roach is one of the best run stuffing defensive tackles in the league.
When we did our free agency preview, yes, we were talking about edges to sign, edges to draft, and we said edge rushers a need. My first thing was like, hey, before we even get to that, let's just – take care of, like, do the housekeeping. Let's just not let Roach leave. And then it's not to say that a DT was more of a need, but it was like, let's just do the housekeeping first, please. Like, please just get Roach in and then move on to your big guys.
Yeah,
and they let him go, you know?
Of everyone. And, you know, I would have liked to keep Vaughn and all these other, I wasn't that concerned about Vaughn. Roach and Yottam, I didn't see what Yottam's contract was. What was it?
I haven't seen it yet. Okay. I'll look it up.
I don't understand that. You had guys who both produced very well who weren't getting big money.
I think they signed him to be a starter, actually. Like, they need him to start.
But did they give him the money? I mean,
I'm looking it up.
Yeah.
So, for me, that was a tough one. That also, to me, if the Lattimore rumors are true, if they were to trade Lattimore now, I think that's a huge
you
mistake.
You
have no depth.
Yeah.
Roach, our weakest thing was against the run last year, and we let the run-stopping DT leave. Those didn't make a lot of sense. I understand not being able to keep all of them and Bond getting out of here, but to lose Roach and Yottam, unless Yottam got paid, I understand if he got a big contract that we couldn't do it. But Roach didn't make – Roach's contract we should have fit.
I'm really pissed about Roach. I mean, I think you
– It just says 1-year deal.
Okay, so I mean, it's probably not a ton
of
money.
Not much.
So, to me, that was a mistake. I loved until hearing Chase might be not ready. You know, Young and Gay addressed, to me, two big needs. But we opened up a defensive tackle need for sure.
Yeah.
Now.
And we were already weak there.
And then if they wanted to trade Lattimore, which I was against all along, but if that was their move to let Yottam go, it basically backed you into a corner that you can't move him.
Yeah, you're literally setting yourself up for failure. Yeah.
I mean, how many games did he come in and fill a spot when Lattimore was out? You know, I think Adebo missed a game and came in and he helped. We didn't drop in pass defense very much.
Yeah, where we are now, I am now firmly against trading Lattimore this season.
Yeah.
Because that will just cripple the defense.
Yeah, I mean, the first name that came up when Lattimore were getting traded,
you guys remember, I said, I don't want a 2024 draft pick for Lattimore. I've been on record saying I want a 2025 pick. So at this point, just keep him now. Hope you can mend defenses. And if you need to trade him next offseason.
Yeah.
You know, let him hopefully have an all-pro year and increase his value.
That's my other thing. This isn't like an NBA Chris Paul situation where, like, this is the year you have to trade him or else he's absolutely going to walk and you get nothing. Like, you don't have to trade this man right now. Like,
yeah. We still have him for three more years.
Your team is better with him on it.
So what I would say is, since Max said, what do you think the defense now versus then? Of the five players, I believe, and we're talking about the three we lost on defense that were contributing and the two that we gained, we now have the two best out of the five, in my opinion. They are the two best players on that list of five. So theoretically, your talent level went up, but now we have holes still to fill. And if they don't fill them, it's not going to matter. So D tackle's a problem. Corner's not a problem if everyone's healthy with everyone that we have. So maybe we can absorb the Yottam loss. But Chase Young's better than Zach Bond at rushing the passer. No one's going to argue that.
Yeah.
Willie Gay is a more proven player than Yottam, Bond, or Roach.
Willie Gay is just a complete bonus because that player did not exist on our team last year.
And they're both
a year before, or a year before.
Yeah.
One's going to be 26 when the season starts. One's going to be 25. If Chase is available, the defensive talent got better, but I think we still have a lot
holes
to address. Yeah, that's my take. Offensively, we did nothing. So I'll just say mine, then y'all give y'all's, and we can wrap that up. We losing Thomas, right? Who else have we lost in offense? Pete, maybe.
Oh, you forgot to mention Marcus May.
I'm fine with that.
We all are.
No,
Corey.
No one's missing him in my
opinion. Corey might be, you know, that hot take he had. Third on tackles.
But. I think my hot take ended up forcing me to, like, root for him during the year. I think if I wasn't tied to him, then
I'm thrilled he's gone.
So back to offense. We lost Thomas. We have not re-signed Pete. He's still out there. I think all three of us thought it would be a good idea to re-sign him as long as the money wasn't crazy. I think there's a high possibility Ramczyk is retiring after seeing that restructure. That worries me.
I think he's around this year, but I wouldn't be surprised if he retires after.
So we'll see. He took a huge pay cut either way, which was generous.
Yeah.
It was huge. It was an actual pay cut, though.
Pete did it the year before.
Right, it wasn't a restructure.
Yeah, Jameis did the same thing. They took actual pay cuts. Honey Badger took one this year.
Yeah, but Rams was huge, though.
But anyway, I mean...
It was bigger than Pete's.
I don't... who else did we... Lynn Bowden signed Delsford, didn't he?
No, he's still out there.
He's still out there.
Okay.
So you're losing them. We signed no one other than the
Cedric Wilson.
The guard and then Cedric Wilson. The guard from Minnesota.
Yeah.
Udo.
Yeah.
So Michael Thomas didn't really play last year, so is what it is. I don't think the team's changed much. I think offensive line was a huge hole coming in, and it's probably bigger than now.
Until we... I mean,
as much as we all want Brock Bowers, I don't see any way in hell it's going to happen looking at the team right now, because before the Chase Young signing, I would have said edge was the number one priority. And now even with the signing, with the injury concerns, I think you still got to look at edge. And then you absolutely have to look at offensive line. So I think, you know, one of those top guys is going to slip to us. I think Fashanu from Penn State is the most the prime candidate to make it to 14. And look, I'll be thrilled if we pick him.
Yeah, he's been projected to us now.
I'm seeing it a lot.
Now, after the Chase Young signing, I think it's like three different mock drafts.
Before, he was getting mocked to us more often than not. This was all last week, so it's looking pretty... I would be shocked if we don't end up picking him.
So I'll kind of start at the beginning with the signing. I actually do like the Cedric Wilson signing. When I was watching his highlights after we signed him, he is a contested catch guy. He's 6'2". He's going up for the high. He's high pointing the ball. He's catching it in traffic. They run him in motion, pull him out of the slot from motion, and looks really sure handed. Even with some of the passes last year, too, was throwing him. There were those crossing routes where, you know, Wilson's only like 7 yards down the field, and two is just humming it in there, and it's sticking to his hands. I don't really think we had a guy fit that role last year. So, you know, it's not a household name. He's not a proven commodity.
Look, last year in Dallas before he signed with Miami.
Yeah, there's a lot of upside to Cedric Wilson. So I do like that signing.
Hold on. One thing I would say, remember, Miami signed him and then traded for Tyreek and then drafted Jalen Waddle. So they signed him to a decent contract.
He was going to be
the one or the two.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, he's the three at best.
So he could be a sneaky...
He could be a sneaky good player.
Sneaky signing. We'll remember this episode later in the year, hopefully. But as far as offensive line goes, when I looked at our draft history, and I'm going to give a shout-out to at Joe Horn's cell phone right now. He actually had a good tweet. Since Loomis took over in 2002, here's the offensive line picks. And he did one tweet was first and second round. The next tweet was rounds 3 to 5. And so the whole thing about drafting an offensive line is when. You know, the rounds, we all know the first and second rounds. Rounds 3 to 5, okay, Monte Holland, nobody knows. Jari Evan, Andy Alleman, nobody knows him. But we got Jermon Bushrod, Carl Nix, Teron Armstead. All in rounds 3 through 5. Nick Saldivari last year. Still waiting for him to pan out. So if there's one of these game-changing impact offensive skill guys there at 14, you know, this team has shown that we can find a guy who can start in a later round. So that's that. But look, like we said before, if Fashanu, one of the top two guys, is there at 14, you have to get him. But if Alt and Fashanu are gone at 14, I don't want to see his reach for a first-round offensive lineman because it's a need.
It's like we talked about. You trade back then.
Yeah. They're not going to.
I know, but that's what you should do.
Well, let me say this, though. I know, to Corey's point, yes, we have had success finding offensive linemen in the later rounds, but what did I text both of you guys back in the middle of the season? I said, I would not mind if the Saints drafted offensive linemen with 4 picks in the next draft, because offensive linemen right now, we need to restock the shelves. You know, Ramczyk, as Nick said, is closer to retirement than you know, we would like. Penning has done jack shit. Ruiz, he's kind of okay.
Yeah.
McCoy is good. The other guard spot right now is manned by either Hurst or Saldivari. So
yeah,
and I would not be upset if we pick 2 offensive linemen in this draft.
And like we said with the QB episode we just did, with the draft hit rate, I mean, it's similar. Like, we went through with quarterbacks and top 5 picks, but it's similar across the board with, you know, if you're going to say what's your hit rate on any draft pick. Yeah, it just.
I do believe offensive line is the most successful, though.
Yeah.
It could be, yeah. That would make sense.
Not by a ton. You're right. I mean, those numbers don't have a wide variance.
They translate better.
But usually they're easier to predict a little bit.
Yeah, but if it was like the level playing field, all things equal, and it's like, okay, how many draft picks will it take to get three offensive line starters or two offensive line starters? You're not going to say, oh, we need two? Let's draft two. We need three? Let's draft three. You're going to have to draft more than what you need anyway.
We need two in this draft. I don't care if they're 2 fifth-rounders. We need two.
So then history would say we draft four.
I mean, look, that would not upset me at all. We have, what, 4 fifth-round picks?
Yeah.
Obviously, the number one goal for me would be to get Brock Bowers with the 14th pick. Yeah. I don't see him getting past the Jets at this point since they fixed their offensive line situation. Now I pivot to give me the best available offensive lineman or the best available edge rusher if it's Dallas Turner or Latu from UCLA.
Yeah.
So if you can give me one of those guys and in the second round swing back around and give me Keon Coleman or an offensive lineman there, I'm happy.
Yeah.
But I need offensive linemen. I really want an offensive lineman with the first round pick or the second round pick. And then another one in the fifth.
Only one.
Not to overdraft someone again.
Yeah, don't overdraft
anybody. Just not overdraft someone.
But we've talked about it. Someone's going to fall. Yeah, someone is going to be, especially if McCarthy makes it into the top 10, like it looks like it's going to happen.
Looking more like possibly 5 QBs before us. 4 definitely.
I feel like four is definite. Man, it would be a shock if Penix or Bo Nix creep into the top 14 picks. I don't see it, but look, it would be amazing.
QB desperate now. You know, if the Vikings trade in ahead of us, they're going to take McCarthy.
Well, the Vikings are already at 11.
Right. So they're, but I mean, they could trade up even higher.
They would need you if they want McCarthy.
Yeah.
Look, that's the dream. Hopefully, Bo Nix, Michael Penix make it into the top 10. That pushes some good players to us.
Absolutely.
So, I think we should go ahead and wrap this one up, though. Any closing thoughts on the initial week of free agency?
The only thing I'm going to say is, I'll go first. Sorry.
Yeah, no.
Is I think it's evident that they are resetting the roster. And
the cap.
And there was a lot of complaining about us not signing a lot of free agents. And obviously that's tough to watch when you see all these teams getting better, when you watch Atlanta get a lot better. But this is what everyone was calling for. So let's embrace it. They still tried to get a pass rusher. They still got the backup linebacker, not backup, competing linebacker, probably a starter next year if he remains here.
Starting caliber.
And they made smart moves only targeting young players that you would say have upside. For sure.
Yeah.
So you got to like
shorter term contracts.
Yeah. Everything. And they didn't sacrifice the team. I think we can complain about Roach and Yottam, but they didn't dismantle the team, yet they didn't get themselves in any bad situations this offseason.
Yeah,
they got out of a couple. So I think, they're giving this a 1-year run. They're like, hey, we're not investing heavily in you. DA, Derek Carr, right. however anyone wants to place the blame from last year, we're gonna keep it together, but we're not committing all the resources to this year. You need to prove this is something worth committing to going forward, and we're gonna do that down the line. We're gonna start to reset the clock and get ourselves in a better position to compete down the road.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with anything you just said. The one thing we didn't touch on, I'm not gonna harp on it, but Nathan Peterman, come on, guys.
Oh, God.
Come on, guys.
You had to say this at the end?
I did. Now, the only thing that brings up, him and Stanley Morgan Jr., look, I love having a St. Aug guy, Purple Knight, Catholic League, shout out.
Special teams, that's fine.
No,
that's fine.
It's a little perplexing why guys who seem to be, like, training camp bodies are coming in now. And then I start to wonder, like, do I care? I mean, does it matter if a training camp guy is here now versus training camp? Like, what's the difference? I don't think there is one. I think it's just a fan perspective of getting upset. You know, it's a complete fan thing to be like, and I'm guilty of it. You want to see someone maybe we could bring in Flacco since Jameis went to the Browns, or maybe somebody
we
know
can. Tried to, apparently.
Yeah, and then you bring in Nathan Peterman.
Well, let me say this though. Underhill said this on his pod. If the Saints signed Chase Young on day one and then they signed the rest of these people, nobody would have said a damn thing.
Exactly.
I don't care about when we sign him. My issue is the fact that we signed the worst quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah.
Like, he is unequivocally fucking terrible.
I mean, you could have signed a jugs machine with better QBR.
Who was it? B&G Review had the tweet about, like, if Peterman would have lined up on every one of his pass attempts and just thrown the ball into the ground on every single one of them, he would have a better QB rating than he has.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you just
he's
need,
terrible.
If you need your guys to catch the balls, I mean, bring out the jugs machine. You don't have to sign Nathan Peterman.
That one pisses me off. Like, now I'm triggered because that dude fucking sucks. He's the worst quarterback in the league. But
he'll never play, so who cares?
Had to save that one for the end for you, Max.
Oh, God. Well, that's just the opposite of bringing in competition. We're talking about, you know, you want competition, iron sharpens iron.
Yeah.
This is the opposite of it. No one is going to call for Peterman over Carr at any point this season.
And then if you really hate Derek Carr,
it's a smart
move
by the coach.
You know, there's those out there saying that Derek Carr wanted Peterman to come in.
Supposedly, no, they played together on the Raiders.
Well, but he wanted him to come in because it's, or DA, who, Derek Carr's a little pet student, didn't want anybody that could compete with him.
Look, I get it, because my biggest issue with re-signing Jameis last year was that the second Carr had a bad game, people were calling for Jameis, and we had that the entire season. This is going a little bit far to the other extreme when you bring in the worst quarterback in the league.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that he still has a job is just unbelievable.
Yeah, hopefully he never sees the field.
All right, we got to stop talking. I'm angry now. But if I don't think we have anything else on this episode, so we'll go ahead and wrap it up. We'll be back for the next episode, which is going to be a real fun one concerning one Derek Carr. So,
do I sense game show?
Game show it is. So, till the next episode, who dat?
Who dat?